What's up, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to 305 Radio, a part of 305 Magazine, right here on MiamiUndergroundRadio.com, your number one underground station. I'm your girl, Dre Mob, and you can catch me on the gram at 305_Brownie. I don't gotta give a shout out to Willie today because he is in the building.
Wagwan, wagwan.
It's about damn time we got Will in the building. Yo. So this is George, 305 Magazine with 305 Radio. Thank God for Will being in the building. But today, our special guest is video, film director, everything Miami.
Hip-hop.
Everything Miami.
Everything Miami.
Everything Miami.
Gil Green. Yo. Thank you for coming to the building, man.
Every time. Every time. When George calls, every time, man.
Appreciate it.
This is the man right here. Been holding it down, holding down the city with the publication and
That's
the Miami
right.
love. So
Amen.
This is where my heart's at. So you guys call, I'm here.
We love it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Man, so I mean, how many
Where do we start,
man? Yo, so I went on your website, gilgreen.com.
Okay.
And you got 32 videos up in your video side.
Yeah, those are select videos.
I mean,
those
you
are
got select so ones. Many more yeah. videos.
Those are for the commercial clients, right?
I mean,
you know, some commercial clients might get scared by some videos. So we put the very, like, friendly advertising videos up there.
Well, shoot. It's those are definitely the ones to catch your attention. You know,
yeah.
more of the popular era.
Yeah.
But, man, you've been making videos in Miami with Miami artists for ages,
Ever.
Man. Forever
Ever.
And a day.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been working with Pitt. How long?
Man, Pitt. Man, I remember when Pitt was just begging to get cameos on the sets, man. And I used to call him up and be like, yo, I'm in town with Akon. Come by the set. I got you. Or I'm here with Little John. Like, and I just remember, you know, Pitt, you know, even when he was on Loop Records and repping Miami and repping the city, you know, this Chico with the cornrows and just always like had positive vibes, great work ethic. And I'm so happy to like even have a connection with him today and see what he's doing for the city.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he's always repping us fully. And I got a lot of love for Armando, man. That's a real dude right there.
That is dope. One time for Pitbull.
Yo.
I mean, not only Pitbull, but you've worked with pretty much every big Miami artist. You have Trick, Ross, Flo Rida.
Yeah.
That's just to name a few of them.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot. One of the things that I love about seeing that kind of, you know, that kind of how the cohesion in the community, like, is that there's a work ethic that everyone kind of has. And I mean, this it separates them from the guys that are making it and the guys that aren't.
Which is why you guys are still making it.
I mean, yeah, like, tell me a little bit about a work ethic that you see with the people that you're working with.
Well, I mean, the work ethic starts with the passion. So, you know, my heart has always been hip-hop and dancehall music. I grew up in Miami, went to South Miami Middle School, Coral Gables High School.
Gables.
Yeah, one shot for the Cavaliers and the boys on Grand.
You already know.
So, like, you know, Miami, you know, and Miami growing up in the late 80s and early 90s was like wild cowboys, man. Like the reggae Jamaican parties down in Perrine, they were something crazy, man. They're legendary. Always ending in a gunshot and some crazy sound clashes. And then watching like the Miami bass scene with, like, you know, how they used to jam on 15th and mm-hmm. and Goombe, you know, in the city.
Goombe.
You know, we got our own culture down here, and I was proud to like be raised in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a passion. Music was a passion, so that was my first passion. And then putting that together with filmmaking, you know, it just made sense to do music videos. So, you know, when I had the opportunity to go to New York and study film, I went to NYU Film School. Got to play basketball up there, and then really got serious with the filmmaking and kind of established myself up there as a film director. So when I came back to Miami, like, it was like I was coming back with not only all these skills, but I was coming back with a little juice.
Mm-hmm.
So all these cats that I remember like trying to come up from the Pitts to the Ross to the Khaleds to the Flows. I mean, I got stories for each one of them, and the most special thing is seeing them before they blew up when they were grinding.
Yeah.
And that's when you see that same passion. And
mm-hmm.
so when it's, you know, they say game recognize game, but passion recognize passion. And, you know, seeing Rick Ross on the sidelines tell me, you know, when I get my first chance, he was on the slip and slide sidelines, like ghostwriting. for other rappers. And I was ghostwriting for other directors. And, like, and I was just, you know, he'll always tell you, I was the boy that used to go get the Gatorade for everybody. But he would tell me, he's like, yo, when I get my first video, I'm going to come get you, man, because I see what you're doing. And when he had Hustling, man, he came and got me, and we did Hustling together and kind of helped put him on the map. And with Khaled, same thing with Khaled, man. Mm-hmm. I used to remember him tearing down all the reggae clubs and, you know, Rockers Island and Madhouse. And
dope.
Khaled was that most passionate DJ. You know he was going to go somewhere. So when it came time to do Born and Raised and we taking over, you know, he gave me that call. So I wasn't even living in Miami, but everyone associated me with Miami and I was doing things. So I would always come back. And, man, it just became like, I just became known as the Miami director because this is my culture. And I brought all the things I was able to learn in New York and L.A., I was able to bring them down here and and put them to use on the film set. And it just made sense. I came back down here and set up shop.
So great that you brought it back because I think it's so important to make sure that we stress that, especially with the Miami scene, because it's something that we've battled for such a long time, but I think we're finally breaking ground, is that it's all right to, like, travel and, you know, take your art and your talents everywhere, but always bring it back home, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, when you have that, like, those stripes that are inside of you, like, where you earn, like, you know, your stripes. You know, Miami, I earned my stripes, and I have to say, it's like who I am. It's like the swag that I have, the flavor that I have, like, you know, the dialogue that we have. Like, so, the, you know, when you're able to have that, that's who it is. So when I'm in Miami, like when I went to school in New York, I mean, I ain't gonna front, those New York guys were clowning me because they wanted to make fun of everything from the South. So
yeah, damn right.
They didn't get it. They didn't get it. They're like, flip-flops and socks? What are you doing now? You know, like, and I was like, man, listen, this is how we do it down South.
Yeah.
And I was bringing my Jamponi tapes up there and all that. And, you know, it was, you know, but that's, I repped Miami. So it was funny watching how, like, when the South took over and I would go up to New York clubs and all of a sudden
now it changed.
All the
game changes.
All the dirty South music up there. It's like, y'all making fun before, but... So in your heart, it's like, you know, Miami's always in my heart. So, you know, the idea is to come back, provide to youngsters what, you know, I was able to learn and spread the love in the community. You know, I had a lot of love for this community. So, you know, that's how we do it.
I mean, that's a beautiful thing, man. And this is the Miami story that I love to hear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You grew up in Miami, you left, you learned a few, you sharpened your skills, you came back. And not only have you started working with other people, but you've been part of the foundation.
Yeah, we set up 305 Films. My first music video we shot, my first like video for a record label artist was Trick Daddy in 1999. Yeah. Video was America, featuring Society, another big Miami rapper from back in the days. And so now it's 20 years, and I'd say I set up shop back in Miami about 10 years ago. We set up 305 Films with my partner, Judd Allison. And, man, we just wanted to bring all of the stuff I was able to learn, all the production, you know, from, like, being on the sets with all the other directors, the Nick Questeds and you know, all the Diddy sets and all these million-dollar sets and taking that because sometimes experience is the best way to learn. So.
Absolutely.
So I was able to basically bring it down here and set up shop. And, man, we've just been knocking it out since then.
Well, thank God for that, right?
Absolutely. Amen. Amen. I mean,
can we talk about Love, Camera, Action?
Absolutely. That's my passion. That's where we're moving into the future. Love, Camera, Action is a nonprofit film camp that... we are organizing currently. We're getting a lot of love from the community. It's basically going to be a free camp, free transportation, free food. It's for underserved youth in Miami, high school kids. And we're going to teach them how to make music videos over the summer. Hopefully, you know, to get them off the street and do something productive and hopefully spark that interest. Because anyone that knows filmmaking knows that filmmaking is a collaborative effort. So you have, like, so many different departments. You know, you have your audio department, you have your cinematographer, your art director, your costume, your wardrobe, your makeup, your producer, and all of these different areas could spark a kid, like, you know, to understand, like, oh, I can be in the entertainment industry and actually have a job and it's something I actually like to do. So yeah. If you like dancing, you could be a choreographer. If you like makeup, if you're just someone who wakes up and makeup is your passion, you could be a makeup artist. And I always say, man, like, even if you love to, like, make donuts, you know, you could be making craft service donuts and checking. You know, in L.A., if you're the craft service on all these movies, you're making six digits, you know, a year. So that's a viable job. Yeah. But whatever you do, you got to just do it passionately, because if you're the guy that wakes up at 4 a.m. and makes donuts for the set, that's fresh homemade donuts, you're going to get the call to be on the next set, right, and the next set, and the next set, because people recognize that. So that's basically what we're trying to inspire the kids, is like, listen, I'm gonna bring in professionals in every category, from cinematographer to the top stylist to the top makeup artist, you know, and basically do these master classes, master workshops, and we're also gonna together collaboratively make music videos, and we're gonna make, you know, a high quality video with a big budget, and we're just gonna set off like the best experience for these kids to not only like put out something, feel proud about themselves, showcase it to their family, their community, and then hopefully spark that interest to either take those skills onto like a college level or even just jump right into the workforce. Either way, we're just trying to bring back love.
All it takes is that. So
that's the type of motivation that carries you for a lifetime.
Oh yeah, I call it spiritual food.
Yeah.
You know, I was like sitting in Club Live watching cats pop bottles all day, and I was like, man, this is not really what I got in this game for. You know, I was in Zulu Nation, so I'm like hip hop knowledge and all of this. And then I was like, I'm like, one day I'm just like, man, what am I doing? I need to start feeding my soul. I'm staring at these dudes having pissing contests with liquor bottles, and I'm like, this ain't really why I got into making these videos. I mean, I love filmmaking, and I understand that having fun and balling is part of the culture, but there's a whole nother side of life, and that's really where we're trying to tap into, is the spirit. So that's absolutely spiritual food for me.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking about film, you have put together a few films.
Yeah.
You put Who is Lou Gehrig?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
And that's, you know, I follow the universe, and the universe, I had a friend of mine that I played basketball with back in the days, a young man by the name of Jeff Fogel. And he unfortunately got Lou Gehrig's disease, which is a horrible disease. If you know about it, you basically lose all your motor skills.
Wow.
You know, it's a neurological disease, and your body starts shutting down, and there's no cure for it. And there's a local group that deals with multiple sclerosis and Lou Gehrig's disease. They asked me to do a PSA for them, because they knew I was friends with him. And I was like, look, instead of doing a PSA that's going to be like a 30-second thing that's just kind of like, I don't know, like Save the Dog, Sarah McLachlan, like, yeah, kind of thing, I was like, let's do a short film. Let's enter it in film festivals. Let's take people on a journey. So we shot like a 20-minute film. Mm-hmm. We raised money, you know, through social media. Udonis Haslam from the Miami Heat jumped on board and became executive producer.
Wow.
And we got a lot of love from, you know, all the Heat players came through. They're part of it because it's kind of like a fantasy movie where we go into the mind of Jeff Fogel and what he could do if he could move his body. So there's a lot of fantasy scenes like that. So, you know, it was a project, again, that just the universe kind of said, do this.
Yeah.
And it was something we put together, and you know, we saw it to the end, and it premiered a couple of years ago at the Miami Film Festival, and got a really great reception.
That is awesome. That's a passion project for real.
Yeah,
that is dope. Yeah. I mean, and that's what kind of reception have you gotten aside from that festival?
Well, in regards to the film,
yeah,
people are interested in like possibly distributing it. We're working on an original sound design because we had a few tracks in there that were actually like, you know, it was a festival, so we didn't clear some of the tracks. So as soon as we can like clear the audio, to possibly get it on other channels. But really, like if you're interested in seeing it, I believe we have it up on the website, whoislougehrig.com.org. I'm gonna find out exactly, but
if not, either way, let them know where they can find you on social media, and they can find all of your information.
Yeah, you can always find me on Instagram at Gil Green, GILGREEN. follow me. And then Who is Lou Gehrig? You just Google search Who is Lou Gehrig, Jeff Fogel. You'll probably find a link to the film. Actually, on my website, you'll find it, gilgreen.com. There's a film section, and there's a link to the film there.
Dope. Yeah. Definitely got to check it out. And you also have One Last Jig?
Oh, yeah. One Last Jig is more of an art project I did for Art Basel.
Yeah, I saw it. I was like, this is, I don't know. Yeah. I read the description. I was like, yeah, I know about Lou Gehrig.
Yeah.
I don't know about this jig.
Well, it's another passion of mine. It's actually cut from a Lupe Fiasco video.
Oh,
the video is called Bad Bitch.
Okay.
And it deals with the use of the word bitch and in hip hop and how we say it and what the context of it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite music videos I ever did because obviously Lupe is like such an intellect and he makes you think.
Yeah, he does.
And that music video is about the impression on kids get with hip hop.
Yeah.
So when your 10-year-old daughter is watching, you know, your favorite artist in a G-string shake her ass, like what is the impression that they're getting?
Yeah.
And when when your 10-year-old son is watching dudes like acting like gangsters all day 24/7 and they don't get a balance of what that life is like without that. You know, what's really happening. So what we did was we paralleled what's called minstrelsy back in the days. They used to have blackface.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Robeson is one of my favorite actors and figures in black history. And in the 20s and 30s, he was one of these actors where, blacks weren't allowed to actually perform. And whites used to put on blackface to perform as blacks. And it's a really sad era in filmmaking. And then they started letting blacks act, but they still kept the culture of putting blackface.
Right.
So they would have to put blackface on their black skin. And if you read Paul Robeson's autobiography and stuff about that, it was like really sad to read because every night he would like basically break into tears as he has to put on this humiliating thing on his face. So One Last Jig is kind of like in the vein of like, you know, putting on these impressions mm-hmm. that we have to, and it's a parallel to hip hop today. So it's really deep. It's kind of like along the lines of that movie Bamboozled, if you ever seen.
Yeah,
that
Bamboozled movie. Was dope.
Yeah, it's one of the greats. So
yeah, I definitely got to check that out. Thanks for explaining it because
man,
I was like, I don't know. I don't think I get this.
Yeah,
I think I get it at first, you know.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a history lesson, and it's understanding, you know. Blacks in the entertainment business and, mm-hmm. and also in the history of America.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I can imagine, man. So this is still on the website as well?
Yeah, I believe, yeah. If you go to the film section on 305 Films, you'll see that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yo, so my next topic is hands down my favorite time of year is Art Basel. Not because of Art Basel, but because of Vibes 305.
Word up.
Yo, you've straight up
hijacked
Art Basel.
Yeah.
One of the Art Basel days, you straight up hijacked it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We have to, man. We have to. This is our city. And that's the give back party. And let me tell you, I grew up in the real side of Miami with real parties, real house parties, where people get on the dance floor and sweat.
Yes.
You know, I was able to see Uncle Al do his thing growing up. And like, yo, Miami cats, you know, we're not too hard. Like, we like to have fun. We like to dance.
Yeah.
And I wanted to set up an event where there's no red carpet. There's no VIP ropes. We don't care who you are.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Dwayne Wade, Gabrielle Union, or whoever you are, whatever rapper you are, you are with the crowd.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not about a separation. It's like the people's party. So it's not about, you know, a lot of times we'd like to like try to feel better than the next person. Like, oh, I'm in the VIP and they're not. That makes me feel special. I was like, nah, we're going to do a party where it's $2 Heinekens. Ain't no list to get in. Like, this is going to be the people's party where it's just a good vibe. And I'm just going to bring my favorite DJs.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunate enough to bring some great artists, KRS-One, Swiss Beats, Fat Joe's. Yeah.
Crazy. Started on that.
Ellie, Elephant Man, Shaggy. A lot of artists I got to work with and really just give back. And the reception is amazing. Every year it just keeps growing.
Yeah.
And remember, we started this 8 years ago. People were still shook to come into Wynwood when we started. Like, yeah. Wynwood wasn't what Wynwood is, but now, like, so we were the first ones up in there, and we're like, you know what? Let's bring people out to Wynwood. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because after that first event, we had a fish fry. All of a sudden, these parties started popping up in Wynwood. Like,
of course.
Like, you know, okay. And now they're bringing reggae and hip hop into Wynwood. So I like to think that we were like the first, you know, the first people to like say, hey, it's okay to cross these tracks over here.
At least come over here. Yeah. You know, you can chill and eat, have a good time.
And now, shoot, Wynwood's popping more than South Beach. So it's crazy.
Is that South Beach has become for only tourists?
Yeah,
it's a tourist, and granted, look, I have nothing against tourists. I have nothing against the tourists that feed our city.
Right,
you know what I mean. But that's not for us. It's not our party.
Nah, like,
the mansion days, the cameo days, those are long gone.
Oh, man,
gone.
Those days, even before Washington, everybody used to ride their whips on.
Yes,
Oakland, man.
Just like it was in the Grove. You used to ride in circles. That's all you did. Yeah. You drove around in. All you did, you went to Coconut Grove. You drove in a, like, you just did laps.
Yeah.
But you with the music and everything.
Had to have 15s or better.
Yes, man. Trunk. And then you had people that you showcased your car. You showcased your whip. Yeah. Some people got caught riding in stolen cars. So, you know, it happened. You know, and then Halloween was a gang fight at the end.
Oh, always.
It was like the grand finale.
Always.
You know what I'm saying?
Always.
And then once you're done with the Grove, then you head out to the beach. And when you get to the beach. The beach didn't get packed because of the clubs. No one gave a crap about the clubs. It was, I'm going to go through Ocean and A1A.
Yep.
And all I'm going to do is lap it up.
Yep.
I'm telling you.
Well, I don't know what
to do. I'm telling you. Yeah, palante. What are you going to do? We're just going to chill. What are you going to do? I'm going to jam out. There was my favorite car to this day, Buick Regal, black with a red stripe. This back seats, there's no back seats. It's 215s. Yeah. And when it's like when the bass is, it's freestyle music with bass.
Basically.
Like, you never knew freestyle music had this much bass until you were in one of those whips. Yo, and it hurt to breathe. That's how deep that bass was.
And you were still shaking.
No, these little monitors that these DJs have nowadays. No. We used to bring out crates of I'm talking about like. Crates. So when that bass hits, your whole chest cavity is like vibrating. Yeah. That's what bass music is. So if you see a DJ with their little two monitors come in and set it up, they might be loud. They might have some good mid range and some treble. But if you want to hear that quad, because in Miami we call it quad, then you got to bring out those big deep dish.
Yo, that's 15s, the only way.
18s, 20 inch woofers and like stack them.
Yo, and you have that at your show, at your events.
Oh, yeah.
You can't stand it.
Listen, and every year I tell myself the same thing. Yo, I've got these dope earplugs for concerts. I'm going to bring them. I always forget them. I'm in front of them speaking.
They're right next to it.
By the end of the night, I don't know who's talking to me. They tap me. I'm like, what, bro? I've been talking to you for 15 minutes. So I don't hear anything.
That's one thing we never front on. I'm like, yo, every year we're going to have the biggest bass system. You're going to hear us from blocks away.
No fact.
Kill it, man. Kill it.
And it's insane.
Yeah.
It's always insane. But that's the thing that when you do an event the way you do, you know what I mean? You not only have a DJ out there. Like, granted, you have food trucks. You have the DJ. Mm-hmm. It's out in the open, but then you have that art section.
Yeah,
like
you know, you always bring a few artists in.
Yeah, we got to flip it every year. I mean, it is Art Basel, so the idea is like, look, there's art, and there's probably a bunch of art that never gets exposed in the mainstream. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we love hip hop. We love one year we did a tribute to old school hip hop, mm-hmm. and we brought Martha Cooperman. Martha Cooperman did the book Subway Art. In like 1979, 1980.
Wow.
And that was the Bible for graffiti artists. You know, so like all these cats tagging up and putting pieces up in Wynwood and you know, learn your history, because most cats like in the 80s and 90s knew about Martha Cooperman's book. It spread around the world. It's called Subway Art. And we did a tribute to her. She's like, you know, 60-year-old lady up in our place jamming.
Yo, she was loving it.
Yeah, loving it. And then we showed KRS-One these old photographs, and he was like pointing out like which cats he grew up with in those photographs. Yeah, it was crazy to see that. So, and even like behind the stage, we change the stage every year. So that year we created a subway that would like basically move, like we created like the subway was coming from New York to Miami.
Oh, wow.
And it would open up behind, and you'd have people sticking their heads out and then getting back on the subway. So it was an interactive art. So always trying to push the art spark the minds, be creative, have fun, and people have a good time. No pretentiousness. That's mm-hmm. that's what we want at the end of the day. No, people don't act pretentious.
And you this year you had the gas face installation. Was that?
Oh, that was a couple years ago. Yeah, that was a couple years ago, and that was like a collaborative art exhibit with like myself, Jonathan Mannion, Bruno from Metro Rap. We basically there's an artist who creates gas masks out of sneakers. And yeah. Li Ning, you know, Dwayne Wade's sneaker company is one of our sponsors. So we had him make us gas masks, and each one got a gas mask and represented art in the way that they saw it.
So sick.
Yeah, so I did a video. Jonathan Mannion did a photograph. Bruno wrapped a car. The theme was, all right, here's your challenge. You get a gas mask, so, you know, do whatever you can to represent whatever you want.
And that is sick.
Let artists be artists.
And then this year you went and you did an interactive VR.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you not thought this year. How was that?
It was the illest thing. It's called augmented art.
Yeah, AR.
Yeah, augmented art. And basically we took images like from our video. Like I do the intro for the Miami Heat every year.
I was gonna get into that. That's super dope.
So Dwayne Wade was hosting our event this year, so we took images from him as well as Udonis, blew them up as like amazing photographs on the wall. But then when you hold up like the augmented art, like a phone or your iPad, all of a sudden it comes to life through the iPad, so it turns into video. And it was something that really bugged Wade out. He was like, oh, I need this in my living room. And everyone was really enjoying it. The people that even got to see it. Some people have so much fun in the party, they never even come to the art section.
That's crazy.
Yeah, just so you know, we have an art section every year.
Yeah, man. No, and that's the thing. Like, for those that don't know, it's augmented reality, but in this case, it's augmented art.
Yeah.
That's the way the function it was serving. It's really dope. This is the future.
Dope.
Yeah. Like that is like cats don't know, but they've been sleeping on it. How long have I been talking about
this? We've been talking about this forever.
For man long, I've been talking about this. So, you know, it's
the Matrix for real.
Yeah, man. Uh-huh. Like I was really impressed to see that.
Yeah.
That you were using that. I was like, damn, that is so dope.
Because we were like, man, he's doing it.
And then we're putting out a t-shirt line that we're going to do augmented art on the t-shirt. That's the next step. So
you see that? Exclusive.
Exclusive.
So we got some things in the works right now.
Man, that is just insane. Yo, how much time do you have? What time is it?
We don't have too much time.
So I'm kind of have to bait you into this. So before you were doing music videos, you used to rap.
Yeah.
Tell me about this, man.
Yeah, man. Uh-oh. I mean, yeah, when you grow up in the culture, man, you just all facets, man. So from beatboxing, like every day was breakdancing, beatboxing, freestyling, battling. And we grew up in that era. And, I grew up, I'd like to say, like, within black culture, you know, my father was a basketball player, professional ball player, and I played ball at an early age, and that really gave me, like, a pass to basically, you know, hang out and go into other cultures and learn it. And I was embraced by some really good friends in black culture, and I just became a product of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, used to kick a little something, and we started. We used to bust rhymes every day, and we just started putting on wax, and we would save a little money because back then there was no computers. You couldn't just go to your friend's house and record a song. You had to save money to get into that studio, and it cost like $500 an hour. Yeah. So it'd be like. And we weren't drug dealers or nothing, so we actually used to go to BJ Wholesales, buy one of those Symphony chocolate bars with the really gold foil that looked expensive but really wasn't.
Yeah.
And we would go down Brickell Avenue and start selling chocolate bars. And then we raised enough money to get in the studio. We had 2 hours of bus in the studio, and we used to drop stuff, and we put it to wax. And the first music video I ever did was for our group. Our group was called Back Live. Yeah, and we had a song called 1,000 MCs.
Yeah.
And we shot it. It was my thesis project. We shot the video for a couple $1,000s. And I was in my dorm room. I sent it to MTV. I sent it to BET, and they all played it. So it was ill. I was like 19 years old in my NYU dorm room and watching our video like on Yo MTV Raps, which was
that is sick.
The illest thing. So you know, at that point, I knew it was something to myself that I knew like if you want to do something, you can do it. You know, because to me that was always crazy. Like I can't like to get on a video, you need to be on a record label, and they got to spend a couple hundred grand on a video, and it's like, nah, we just did it. And we did it, and then we put it out, and people embraced it. And from there, it was funny because when I was shooting, like, I was working as a PA, but I had a video on Yo MTV Raps and BET in the box. And I remember we were doing a video with Case from Slip and Slide and Trick Daddy and them guys, and they were looking at me, and Case came up to me. He's like, man, you got a video on Yo MTV Raps. I was like, yeah, yeah. But I was like the water boy still, right?
Yeah.
And he always calls me 1,000 MCs to this day, man, because he's like, yo, I'm peeping your shit, man. I like your shit. You know? So it's funny. It's like I didn't make no money off of it, but I proved to myself that we could, you know, at an era where there was no YouTube or anything, because there was only 20 videos on at a time back then. So it's like to get in one of those slots was a big deal. So
playing basketball on the courts of Miami was tough.
Hell yeah.
No, the music industry was a different monster.
Different monsters. It's nowadays it's really set up for you to be independent. Mm-hmm. You know, you can record your own music, you can put it out your own, you know, you couldn't do that before.
It's an independent world, right?
It's an independent world. So these young kids, man, jump on it because now you got the tools to do it.
Yo, you want to kick a verse?
16.
Nah, man. Those days.
Come on, Gil Green.
He asked everybody. He asked everybody that comes here. But he just finished telling me he was a rapper too. He used to make beats and everything, man.
I did.
You can't. Hey, you can't try somebody and not, you know, not expect a battle real quick, bro.
I won't do it.
Man, you are gonna have to catch me on a. You get some big woofers in here, maybe I might drop something. I gotta feel it, man. I gotta feel some bass or something.
We need a sponsor to bring us subwoofers.
That's what you need.
We need a wall of speakers, please.
Yeah.
Contact us at 305 Radio Instagram. Thank you very much. No, definitely. I ask everybody and just see if I get it out of my head.
Not gonna get it, huh?
Hold up. We also got Jen in the building. Hey, Jen, you rap?
Shout out to Jen at Jensen Photography on the gram.
Absolutely. But yeah, man, like, shit, that's dope. That's really dope. How that's just passion.
Yeah, it just speaks volumes, fun, man. We didn't have, you know, we just put egg cartons on the wall for the soundproofing and pantyhose pop filters, and man, we do whatever we did to like have fun and you know, be involved somehow in the music and in the culture.
Now, being that you've had your hands dug into every single aspect of it, and especially where you're at now, your track record, your work ethic, and everything speaks for itself. What would you tell an artist that's going independent, that maybe that they're just not wise enough, they don't know, they're unaware of the way the world's set up for them right now?
Man, I tell the youngsters, because whenever we're filming in the city, cats come up to us and they're like, yo, I want to do what you do. How do I do what you do? Or when I talk to young kids. And I think the biggest challenge for these young kids is a lot of them just want instant gratification. And that doesn't happen at all. That will never happen. Ain't nobody going to do shit for you. That's the first thing you got to realize. Okay. So to me, the formula starts with passion. You got to love what you do because you're going to be putting in crazy hours and it cannot feel like work. It has to feel like love. So you be ready for those 20-hour days and working for no money, but working for a career. Yeah. And when you have passion, people recognize it. Mm-hmm. So other people that are in that can give you opportunities are like, they gravitate. Like I said, passion recognizes passion. So so when they see somebody that's so passionate about what they're doing, they're like, I like that kid. I want them on my team. I want to show them what I know, or I'm just watching them do what they do. Then it's just about how much work you put in. You set your goal. You know, you set your 10-year goal, your 5-year goal, your 1-year goal, your 3-month goal.
But have your goals.
Have your goals, because you got to see it. You got to see it. Michael Jordan had to see himself winning championships to win a championship. You have to visualize yourself doing whatever it is you got to do, and then expect
even look forward to the failures. The failures are the best part, because those are the times that you learn. You're like, oh man, I messed up so bad on that. And I know if I'm in that situation again, what to do now. So everyone that has succeeded has failed. So Michael Jordan got cut off his 10th grade team. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So anyone that's great has failed. So you look forward to the failures. That's key. Be passionate. Work. And the money, don't worry about the money, because the money will follow the passion. If you're chasing money, it ain't going to work out. You're in for a quick burn, and then you might hit it hard, and then you might be out. But people that are in it for passion, they set careers. That's what I tell people all the time. It's like, you know, it's not about chasing the dollars. We get caught up in the materialism of U.S. so much. Everything is dollars, dollars, dollars. Everyone's rapping about dollars and dollars. I got to get paid. No, man, all the people that are great would do it for free. All the people that are great would be doing exactly what they're doing right now for free. And that's what I tell young kids. Money will follow. When you're great, the advertisers want to come in and say, oh, man, you're doing it. We love you. All right. Now you'll see the money will come in. Don't worry about that. If you got to pay bills, you get that day job. And when you check out, you do your passion. You know what I'm saying? So, like, when I was PAing, making $100, $200, I'll tell you a really good story. I used to ghostwrite for other directors.
Okay.
So I would come up with the ideas and the concepts, and then basically they would do them, and they would get the credit, which is fine, because it's like I was paying my dues. And I would tell these directors, look, don't even bother like paying me for ghostwriting. Bring me on the set. Let me shadow you. Let me see how you execute, because I didn't know how to execute. I had these ideas, but I didn't know like how, what lens to use and where to put this. So for me, it was like, all right, you're going to use my ideas. That's fine, because I got 1,000 of them. But at the same time, like, I'm going to learn from you. And so I knew. So when it came time for me to do my first videos, I was confident, because I knew I've been on so many video sets and everything. I know how they ran from the best. So, you know, man, one of my, and when you're young, you're looking for those breaks. So like one of the first breaks I thought was going to come my way was when Trick Daddy did Shut Up, which was like classic record, right? Yeah. And I had wrote this treatment, and it was for like, we're going to introduce the band, we're going to go shoot in the Orange Bowl, we're going to bring the bands out, and we're going to bring the Donks and everything. And at the time, I had done a bunch of like little work for Slip and Slide, and I was like, oh man, I know they're going to get me this job. And they passed on me. They didn't give me the job as a director. And I was like, man, I was heated, because I was like, man, that was going to be my break. Like, you know, you don't have nothing under your belt. And then they brought in another director from New York who came down, and they called me because they knew I PA'd in Miami. So they're like, oh, you want to work on as a PA? You make $100. I was like, all right, cool. Meet us at the Orange Bowl. I was like, the Orange Bowl?
Oh, no.
I was like, what?
I knew this sounded familiar, man.
I get to the Orange Bowl, and lo and behold, basically they're shooting my concept, right? Which I didn't get. I wasn't ghostwriting for this director. Yeah. They just took my concept, gave it to another director. Mm. And basically I was picking up trash all day. That was my job. So I went from, I thought I was going to be directing this video, to not only did they take my idea, I'm like picking up trash on the idea that I know is going to be a huge song and everything. It was probably one of the most like humiliating days, but I sucked it in. I sucked it in, and I used it as fuel to like build up more fire and more passion and everything. And you know, and down the road, you know, I did tons of jobs for Slip and Slide, and I had a career later. You know, and that you know, I'm not sure where that director is right now, but like I knew, like for me, like I'm just going to take the L that day.
Oh man, that's such a tough L to take, man.
Especially when you're so passionate. Like I've been putting years and years of this. So, but that's what happens, man. You got to expect that, and you got to like embrace it, embrace the highs, embrace the lows. You know, it's all gonna come. It's all part of this journey,
man.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just insane. Like, yeah, that's, I appreciate you telling us that story, because that's, I don't know if I would have been so upset. I would have been a bad
video. I was going to see if you wanted to share some advice, but you've been dropping so many gems.
I've been dropping gems all night.
Knowledge, you know? Like.
Yo, Will, you have any questions, bro?
Yeah.
Want to tune in?
You want to punch in here real quick, son?
I don't know, man.
You want to stay for another hour?
From where you are and taking the L's, and now
I got one question for you. The intros to the Miami Heat.
That's where I was going.
Yeah. This year was the whole South Beach theme, right?
Yeah, the Vice.
Right, the Vice.
Right.
Was that your creative vision to go that route? And then because of that, it pretty much changed the whole aesthetic of the team this year.
Well, the Miami Heat organization is an amazing organization.
Shout out to the Miami Heat organization.
Yeah, shout out to everyone that works in that building, because they do things in a way that I wish like other like people would follow. Mm-hmm. They involve me all during the year. They bring me into the creative meetings. They have a whole creative team, mm-hmm. and they have this philosophy where everyone throws ideas out. So again, it's like it's collaborative effort. So they know that they have these Vice uniforms that they're going to do. Mm-hmm. So we need a theme. Mm-hmm. And this is like 9 years now that I've been working with them. And they trust me now, where it's like they kind of, you know, it goes back and forth. I pitched a few ideas to them, and then they bid on one. They mm-hmm. bid on the whole, like, let's start with like the Vice, you know, the old school, yeah. you know, Lambo coming yeah. down, or the Ferrari coming down the bridge and the Vice colors. And they bid on it, and then it was my idea to make it rain actually in the arena, which was crazy. We built a whole pool in there and actually put Wade and these guys in the water, which they didn't love, but they did it. They troopers. But yeah, every year we just try to keep raising the bar, and they give me the freedom to, like, you know, trust that I'm going to take them somewhere. Yeah. Sometimes they have some ideas and we expand on it. We mm-hmm. go back and forth. But big shout out to Miami Heat, man, because that's one of the favorite jobs I look forward to every year.
Man, because every intro, every theme is yeah. so on point. I mean, it's yeah. exciting, especially when we had from LeBron.
Yeah.
He was in town.
Yeah.
To now, every single year it's a different theme. So
yeah.
you guys have these think tanks, and you finally come up with the ideas and knock them out.
Yeah, and you know, also it's just knowing the culture. Again, I'm a big basketball fan. My father actually played basketball with Udonis Haslam's father back in the days.
Oh, wow.
So there was a link there when I first got to do the first one. UD really kind of like vouched for me, like, yo, let Gil kind of do this. And I was doing my thing on the video tip, and that whole team, they saw my work and they took a chance with it, and we've been riding out ever since.
Dope.
Yeah.
Man, I saw UD playing Miami High.
Oh yeah, the Stingaree.
Yeah, boy.
He was a big boy back then.
He was, yeah. But he got up.
Yeah.
That big boy got up and he was bodying people, bro.
Oh, are you a football fan?
I enjoy the game, but I couldn't tell you who was on what team. I couldn't. You know what? I'm a Miami fan, so when the Dolphins like get some momentum, I'm like, you know, they're cheering for them. But it's been a minute.
Dolphins getting a facelift.
We're always though. Rooting for the yeah. home teams,
Dolphins
regardless.
Getting a facelift next year, though. Shout out to the Dolphins. Get me in that stadium.
You have a pretty big presence in Jamaica.
Yeah.
How did that start? Like, you know, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. Ever since I was probably like 7 years old, you know, I've been going to Jamaica. My best friend, I consider him my brother, Andre Grant, that we grew up together, is Jamaican and had family in Kingston. And so in the summers, we would go down to Jamaica, and I kind of grew up in his house. Mm-hmm. So I grew up on some good oxtail and rice and peas.
Oh, my God,
oxtail.
And, you know, and the culture and the patois and everything that, like, was Jamaican, I kind of fell in love with. And we used to, like we said, back in Parine, they used to have crazy sound clashes. And this is like, you know, like Jamaican culture takes their DJing seriously. Like, yeah. It's like a sport. It's a competition. And, you know, that's actually why I give Khaled so much props, because he saw that and he jumped in that world, in that Jamaica world. And I had this opportunity. I was working with 3-6 Mafia at the time. Mm-hmm. Actually had did a film for them called Choices when I was like 20 years old.
Oh, shit. That was you?
Yeah. That was like, we shot 12 days on like no budget. And somehow we ended up with a cult classic of Memphis.
I love that album so much. And then I was like, oh, damn, there's a movie?
Yeah. Yeah. So 3-6 Mafia was big. You know, they were big supporters of me in the beginning. And then and we were doing big videos. They were spending some good money, like, you know, 300 grand on a video, 250. And then VP Records, they knew, I knew a girl there, and she knew I loved reggae music. She's like, yo, I got this project, Sizzla Kalonje. I was like, Sizzla, I love Sizzla. What? You know, like, and she's like, yeah, but we only got like no budget, like 50 grand or something. And I was like, yo, don't matter. And I asked all my boys in New York that work on film. I was like, look, do you want a free trip to Jamaica?
Nice.
You just got work. And they're like, yeah, let's go. And we all stayed in a room like this, like four of us, like sleeping on the floor. All, you know, someone came back with a big bag of weed and was like, I got this for $10. And I was like, they was excited. So I was like, all right, cool. I got my film crew. $10 weed and they're good. And then we shot this video called Thank You Mama, which became like the classic video for Sizzla. And it was the first like real video to be shot on film in Jamaica. Because before that, people were shooting VHS. So it was like real quality. It was 16 millimeter film. And Sizzla, who's like this Bobo Dread, his whole like Rasta camp became our film crew. They were carrying dollies and equipment down the gully. And we shot this beautiful video and it made some noise. And from there, it was like Elephant Man, Buju Mantan, Wayne Wonder, T.O.K., all the guys, Sean Paul, all of them like followed suit and understood. Because I, again, like the South, you know, when it came time to represent the South, like, I knew it. So Little John and 3-6 Mafia was easy because I knew what crunk was.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of New York directors didn't understand it, didn't want nothing to do with it. So the same thing with, like, when it came to the Jamaican culture, like, yo, I could actually understand what they chatting on a record. And I knew, like, the dances. So when Elephant Man had Ponda River, I was like, okay, this is how you do Ponda River, and this is how you do Chaplin. And so we was able to break out all those dances, and I knew the culture very well. So I think that's one thing artists appreciate about me is, like, they're going to get somebody that actually lives in that world. And so I understand where they're coming from. Because that's the thing. Artists want their video to represent them at the end of the day. So to get in their head and... And I've been fortunate, man. I've been really blessed to be a part of that.
Sure, it's you've been a part of hip hop culture, you know, as behind the scenes as a whole.
Even other genres, right? I guess you worked with Sting recently, right?
Yeah.
No, I was Sting.
Sting was like, yo, I had to pinch myself. I'm like, yo, he's an icon.
Yeah.
And when he was in the middle of Kingston, and we were bringing him to all of, like, you know, obviously it was a Shaggy Sting collaboration. Yeah. But Sting is so cool, man. He was like in the middle of the Garrison, and then and chilling with his guitar playing, and
that's so dope.
So I've been really blessed and fortunate to travel the world, go to countries. You know, Akon took me all through Africa, which was amazing. Going through Angola and South Africa and Ghana with him. I've been able to shoot in China. Next week I'm going to India, so it's like it's a blessing, like, to see the world and do what you love. Thanks, you know, I really count my blessings.
Passion.
This is passion, man. It'll take you there.
This chapter of Miami Stories is about passion.
Yeah,
it is amazing, man.
Yeah, we're equally blessed to have you on the show and share that with our audience as well.
Heck yeah! I mean, especially with you know. Jen, photographer through and through. since you've pretty much lived the Miami evolution, you know. And I love that you brought up Khaled back in the day, because I used to listen to him on 96.1.
Yeah, Mix 96.
Yeah, that was insane.
No, listen, it was that, man, crazy. Was insane. And when you hear the stories, like, yo, he would be in a room like this, screaming his head off, no shirt on, sweated up, because he loved it. I mean, Khaled exudes passion.
Yeah.
Right? And so people all the time, they're like, people that don't get Khaled, or I didn't get Khaled in the beginning, they'd be like, what does Khaled do? He doesn't really produce. He doesn't rap. He doesn't do this. I was like, you don't understand.
You don't,
like,
get it. You don't get it.
He is passion. He lives this thing, and he doesn't stop. Like, he dreams it, he wakes up, he eats it.
That's what's up.
And look at him now, man. Like, he's one of the success stories out of Miami. Definitely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Him, Ross, Flo, Pitt. I mean, people come to Miami and learn their swag. Look at all the cats that come to Miami. They're not from Miami.
Yeah.
And they live in the city for a couple of years. They party in our clubs for a couple years. They learn our swag. Like, Miami's got that something in the water or something that's like, it's got this flavor. Mm-hmm. And it's this melting pot of all of these Caribbean cultures and peoples. And you know, we got our own thing. And you know, big up to like people like Pitt and Ross and Flo and Luke and, you know, people that set it off. People don't recognize what Luke did in the industry.
Yes, man.
But like to be the first like independent hip hop record label and
that teach went to the Supreme Court.
Went to the Supreme Court. And but just also just to have enough knowledge that it's like, yo, I'm gonna make $9 out of $10 while y'all rappers make $1 out of $10 and like was schooling people on that type of knowledge and to allow the Master P's and the Cash Money's to come afterwards. So it was like, you know, Miami really set off a lot of things there.
Miami doesn't know, like, people don't know about Miami, man.
They
overlook it. They think it's just a place to party at.
Miami's not knowing got that history.
We gave birth to a lot of things.
Miami's got history, man. You got KC and the Sunshine Band, man. Come on, like, that's Hialeah right there. So you got Betty Wright. Like, Miami's got from the 60s, 70s, like, even before the Cocaine Cowboy era, man, there was, like, flavor. Overtown.
The Lyric
was,
Theater.
The Lyric, like, that was the place, you know, that obviously I wasn't alive then, but I'll talk to the old heads that still live in Overtown, and they'll tell me, like, when Overtown was a thriving neighborhood before they built I-95 right through it, that was our, like, Apollo.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like, you know, blacks weren't allowed to be on the beach after a certain night, after a curfew, which, like, as soon as it became night. So they would do their first show in the Eden Rock. And, you know, and like, cat, like, all the big artists would do their first show there. And then they do the real show over in Overtown where they, like, really get loose. And so the Lyric Theater, I'm so lucky that I was able to do Trick's video, America, in front of the Lyric, because that was, like, you know, that was one of the... My ideas is like, yo, I want to do my first video in front of like such a historic landmark of Miami.
And, it's dope. Yeah. I mean, like that, when you think about it, it fits perfectly.
Yeah.
You tell a story without really saying it.
Yeah.
Now, when you start working on production and you have these ideas, like what's a little bit of your creative process when you're putting these things together?
And that's a great question. Every project has its own kind of like chemistry. Sometimes an artist will call me and be like, yo, this is what I want to do. So I'll kind of know where a guide is. A lot of times they'll be like, yo, just here's a record. I need a concept. I put the record in my Jeep and I ride out. I put that bass like heavy. I let that shit like infiltrate my blood. And I put my head like in the world of what the artist was thinking and what they were doing. But at the same time, I'll be that dude that, because I'm passionate about it, will study filmmakers not even in the hip-hop genre, like rock genre, like Michel Gondry's and these amazing directors and their techniques. And a lot of, sometimes some of the dope videos that I've like won awards for, like one year I did a Little John video, I Don't Give a and it won the Source video. But it's really like I was really looking at a Spike Jonze video, Smack My Bitch Up, and I just basically did the hip hop version of it, you know. So it's like that video was told through the perspective and the eyes of one girl going through a crazy night.
It was.
So I was like, all right, and I met Little John, I was like, yo, we gotta take this, what they're doing in this rock world, and apply it to this. So so it's always being open to like learn and study greats beyond like, you know, just being in this world of urban world. Like you gotta go into the rock world, the classic world. You know, film theory and knowledge. One of my favorite films is I Am Cuba, which was shot in the 50s. That has amazing, like, shots. Yeah, check it out. It's a Russian film shot in Cuba. And the shots there are amazing. So it's really, like I said before, it's passion. It's that, you know, if these young kids want to be a director, you can't just be watching the top 20 music
videos.
Right,
and
be like, oh, I want to do the... No, go study. Go watch the DVDs, watch the director, understand how they did this shot, how they did that shot. Go to the archives and think how you're going to push the envelope. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you're just going to be like everyone else, then you're just going to be a number. But if you're going to step out the box a little and push it a little, then it's like, all right, now what's that cat got? Because he's saying something.
Yeah. You know, and not only that, but I know that within the circle of directors or PAs or anyone that's on your team at any given moment, it's a learning experience. And I've heard, and not because I've asked you or nothing like that, because I've ended up
being lucky enough to work with some of these people.
Okay.
With some of them, when I mention you, they go, I used to work with Gil Green. I started with Gil Green. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, it's really dope to hear that. And then if you hear from one person is one thing. But when you hear from five people, it's a different world. You know what I mean? So you know, it's dope to see that you sparked that passion, that motivation in a lot of people.
Man, that's the thing that I'm most excited about. Like, at the end of the day, man, people are people. And, you know, like, if I could help a young kid, you know, that's passionate, if I can open a door or teach him what somebody took the time out to teach me, then I'm going to do it. Because that energy, it always comes back. Energy is always, you know, it's a two-stream thing. So if I'm throwing good energy, like Joyce can call me anytime. I'll be like, yo, we messed up today's tape. You got to come back tomorrow. I'm like, all right, let's do it, you know, because it's like, you know, I respect everyone. And
good,
because
I'm a little nervous. I don't recording? Know if, like, we're okay right now.
we might just tell you that just to do it over. Just to do it again.
We have it on film. You're recording it, though.
Yeah,
right?
I got it.
Oh, we good.
It's also about checking your ego.
We're good.
Yeah, I'll come back tomorrow.
Yeah, this is what I love about Gil, man.
Yeah, like no one is better than the next person, man. We're all on this earth together. It don't matter how much money you got, that more than the next person, whatever. It's like, yo, you can eat at my table. Like, that's how it is, and that's how it's always gonna be with me and my circle.
Thank you, same here.
Push away from all that like I'm better than the next man. I just can't. I really detest that. And so when you see these youngsters and we run into them all the time, and they'll be like, oh, we want to get on the film set. Boom. We give them a walkie. We give them a 305 film shirt. Wow. And we're like, yo, jump on board. And some of them have the work ethic and have made it. Like, you know, I'm watching these kids, like, they got thriving careers and they're paying for their family and everything now. And I get excited when I see them. And some of them are expanding to directors or ADs or editors. And then some of them don't. Some of them just like, man, this ain't for me. And it's like, okay, well, you just don't got it. Like, you either got it or you don't. But if you got it, here's an opportunity. And we're not going to hand you, like, you're not going to be a director overnight. But those people you're talking about have paid their dues.
Yeah.
Like, one director I've been working with the last couple of years, Michael Garcia, who you probably know very well.
Yeah, Garcia.
And I remember Garcia from his music days. And when he told me he was doing film, I was like, man, anything you need, because he's always been a good person. And watching him blow up now as a director is like... Yeah. It's like watching your kid, like, you know, on the basketball court, like, scoring 20. It's like, yo, you get proud and you get excited, because the more energy I put out and the more they win, the more I win, you know.
Absolutely.
So it's a we thing. So
man, that's so dope, man.
And I mean, like,
if Vibes 305, she almost started crying.
No, I really did.
She cried at KRS-One.
Oh, man, that was legendary. That was a dream come true for me.
I got to take a picture with him and everything that night, so that was very special.
Let me tell you.
How dope is he?
Yo, not only that, but let me tell you, it's one thing that, all right, in Miami, for those that are listening, so in Miami you have your parties and whatnot. Different artists go to different clubs, even if they're across the street from each other.
Yeah.
So Vibes 305 was so dope. I mean, like, this party was so sick that it was Fat Joe and KRS-One. Yo, from across the street or a block and a half down, Swiss Beats dipped from his party. He was like, yo, I'm out.
Yeah.
His party just started, by the way.
Yeah.
He was like, yo, I'm out. Yeah. Why? Yo, KRS-One and Fat Joe are Vibes 305.
That was legendary.
He was insane.
And all of them
were from the Bronx. So it was like, you know, KRS-One is one of my favorite
artists.
I mean, just for what he stands for, his story, the knowledge he puts in his music, you know, and that's what inspired me. When I was young, it was like, I wouldn't have read Malcolm X if Chuck D didn't mention it in his lyrics. You know, I wouldn't have understood, like, society's ills to the degree that I understand them if KRS-One wasn't dropping jewels. So what I miss about today, and you're starting to see it come back, is that a lot of those artists were teachers.
Yeah.
And not in a way of, like, preachers, but a way of, like, yo, dropping knowledge. Like, yo, this is what it's about. Stop the violence movement. Mm-hmm. This, that. And along the way, you know, that kind of got lost. And now you see it. You see the J. Cole's coming back and the Kendrick's
Substance,
coming back.
Yeah,
and it's like a wave. You have the wave, the slope that goes down, and then the slope that goes up.
Yeah.
And I think that that higher learning, overstanding music.
Yeah.
That you wanted to be overstanding everything. You know yeah. what I mean? Like that faded away because I think it probably got saturated in a way. We had too many people trying to do that yeah. and not being good at it.
That's it. I mean, was.
Let's be real.
There was some that became very gimmicky.
Yeah, and yeah. then like you have to stray away from that because you look at West Coast. You have I'm thinking AC Alone, Hieroglyphics,
right.
Bus Driver. Like right. that's insane rap.
Right.
Like that's like you gotta wait. Don't move, guys.
Dell,
I gotta listen.
Dell is like yo. I got like
Dell is insane.
Yeah.
So you know you have that going on. Then you have like once it started getting down with like the Little Johns and whatnot, people felt. Like, they just didn't want to think about things.
Right.
You know, they
right,
just want right, to chill right. and just relax. But, right. like, people are done chilling and relaxing.
Yeah.
The club's a little over.
Yeah. I hope so, man. I mean, not to say that, I think what was so great about hip-hop in the 80s, to me, is there was all types of music. So you could yeah. go to a booty club and there'll be a pop that coochie contest going yeah. on. And that's okay because there's a place for that. But then you could you know, go to a Chuck D or a Brand Nubian concert and yeah. get some knowledge. And, man, even Heavy D. I remember seeing Heavy D at the arena. And he came down here and he had the whole crowd. And Heavy D was the most positive cat that you yeah, could ever nice. Think of. So, you know, and then you had your NWAs that were fighting for, you know, the police and justice. Mm-hmm. There was all of these things. No, it wasn't just one kind of like thing that was popping. It was a variety, and that's what was so dope.
And it wasn't so gimmicky.
No, everyone was real, and it was best. The 80s was, you know, being able to watch the birth of hip hop in that era, the golden era, the 86 to like 92 kind of yeah. era was like. Man, I feel like lucky.
Damn right. Yeah, yeah that's not something you listen to now. You know, it's like when hip hop started, cats were like, "Yo, but rock." But what about rock? This hip hop stuff's a fad.
Oh yeah, I got this, man. People,
big time.
Yeah,
and look at
yeah.
it now.
Yeah, now it runs the world.
Yeah, fact. And I mean, like, and that's it. And you know, going back to what I originally said, man. Like, I just think it's really dope. Every encounter I've had with you, it's just. Better and better, and like you've always been that dude that's always like positive outlook, always looking at how to build for things. Not you're always like, yo, moving forward, like this is what I like. It's always the next project,
yeah,
the next project. So I'm glad that you took some time out to come out here.
Oh, shit, absolutely.
Where could real quick your website, your social?
Yeah, let me drop it.
Your social.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. My social media, Instagram is Gil Green, GILGREEN. You could check out my website, gilgreen.com. If you want to learn a little bit more about the film camp, we're still, you know, organizing it. We're hoping to launch it this summer, but if not, definitely the following summer. I'm learning a lot about the nonprofit world and what it really takes to structure something like that, but you could visit lovecameraaction.org and learn a little bit about what we're doing there. And there's a few more projects in the works, like you said, but they're not ready to be dropped yet, but right. you will be hearing about them soon.
That's what's up.
But yeah, man, thank you for having me here. And anytime you need something for me, you know, from me, I'm
shit,
always
man,
available.
I appreciate you.
Yeah,
man,
it's his own team.
Shit.
Yep.
If anything, yo, just next time, you know, you might want to drop 16.
You set up for that. You got the instrument. You got the vinyl.
Ready. Nah,
you know, you got
just,
some old school brand.
I mean, I tell everyone just go out and
drop it. I might drop it if you got some old school instrumentals. I ain't going acapella, man. I need something to move me though.
And my phone's dead.
Nah, big bass speakers.
Next time. Big bass. Is that our headphones with the big ass woofers next to me?
Yo. Yo, if you want to hear your boy, you could probably Google and find some record online. It's probably
yo,
out there.
Somebody posted it recently. I can't remember who it was. Huh? Somebody posted that video recently.
Oh,
it was probably me. Yeah. 305magazine.com, ladies and gentlemen.
Yo, the crazy thing is we were pushing records in Japan. And was it you that said somebody sent me something about how much the record was selling on the
oh damn.
Somebody that's was crazy, like though. The vinyl, you know, because vinyl's back.
Yeah.
So like
if you have the OG ones,
yeah.
The press.
So someone sent me a link that they were selling that vinyl for like $50
damn.
For the 12 inch, And I had a whole box that I dumped out. I was like, damn, I'm going to sell these to make some come up. But I had just dumped them, man, because I was like, I ain't never going to put these out.
Oh, man, you should have kept them.
Yeah, so damn, cool. I would have definitely cashed in.
Shit, if I could sell magazines, I got boxes of 3 or 5 magazines still.
Oh, you got to keep those, man. Oh, those are going to be legendary.
Hell yeah. But shit, this is dope, man. Yeah. Shit, I got everyone in the building. This is really dope. I'm glad you came out, Gil.
Absolutely.
Anything else you wanna? Any other gems you wanna drop?
Any shout outs? Anything?
I mean, I shout out all of Miami, man, because you know this is where, you know, the passion started. You know, all the cast that I was able to play basketball with, from South Miami to Coral Gables. You know, some of them. You know, didn't, you know, some of them locked up right now. Some of them, you know, took the other path. But, you know, the relationships and the friendships are there. And I got a lot of love, man, especially the Grove in South Miami, where, you know, I used to basically hang out and learn a little bit of my flavor from. So big shout out to those neighborhoods and the boys from back in the days. Y'all know who you are.
That is what's up.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for listening. This is George 305 Magazine.
LMG Willie.
LMG.
Hey, man.
I will. Willie.
Yeah. I'll be a PA whenever you need somebody. I'm sure she will too. I'll get that coffee for you, whatever you want, man.
Let's do it, man.
I can get whatever you need too, so whatever.
I do PA work. Let me know. Yeah. You got a whole squad here, bro. Good.
Make sure you guys follow at 305 Radio on the gram. 305_Brownie on the gram. And make sure you guys tune in right here on Miami Underground Radio. Thank you so much, Gil.
Thank you.
Thanks, yeah.
Yo.